me write a brief outline, and then we'll proceed. So, yes? Oh, you can't see past that? Okay. All right. Can you see all right? Okay. Thanks, Andrew. All right. So, first, I will define bounded primitive renormalization, then talk about length of Poincaré GD6. And then Riemann surfaces and weighted arc diagrams. All this will be defined, and then theorem and further results. All right. So, anyone with paper and pencil can do mathematics, and anyone with chalk and a blackboard can give a talk. So, for my simulated PowerPoint presentation, this is my outline. So, first, let's define bounded primitive renormalization. Okay, so let's recall a quadratic-like map is a degree 2 proper holomorphic map F from U to V with U, say, compactly contained in V, a subset of C, and in my case, okay, so it's the complete, U, V disks, of course, topological disks, all right, and we can define the filled Julia set of a quadratic-like map as the intersection n equal 1 to infinity of f to the minus n of v. And for our purposes, I want to assume that kf is connected, all right, which is the same as saying that the critical point of F, which will be unique because it's degree 2, is in KF. So whenever I talk about a quadratic-like map, I'll mean one with a connected filled Julia set. All right? So, let's see here. Right. So, let F from U to V be a quadratic-like map. We say that F is N renormalizable if we can find, say, un, vn, such that f to the n from un to vn is quadratic-like. So typically we want this critical point of f to, say, lie in un. Right? So, again, we denote by kn, I could say kn of f or something, the filled Julia set k of this f to the n, all right, the filled Julia set of this renormalization. Sorry? Yeah. So, this is interesting. That, yes. They're sort of typical pictures of this, okay? So, sort of a pictorial example. Might look something like this, but say a real period 3 renormalization, which I'll use as a typical kind of pictorial example. So here I have, say, here's F, so here's U, V, here's UN, VN, well, here's, in this case, U3, V3, F cubed, and this would be K3 of F. All right, so first of all, this whole theory of quadratic-like maps, which should be familiar to most of you, quadratic-like maps and renormalization, of course, goes back to Dewitt, Ian Hubbard, and to answer Jack's question, I believe it's a theorem of McMullen. Maybe it goes back earlier. Probably goes back earlier. But the first reference I know of is McMullen. That K n of f depends only on n. And in particular, it's you can kind of move V3 around. And kn of f is not going to change. All right. So we say that, what do we say? We say that f is primitively n renormalizable. Gotten one step ahead of myself. If, I can say it this way, that K n of f intersect f to the k of K n of f is empty for k less than 0, less than n. All right, so this example, of course, it's primitively n renormalizable. We're just saying that these are all disjoint. All right, and I'll denote by script k sub n of f to be this union from k equals 0 to, say, big n minus 1 of, f to the k of kn. Usually I'll suppress the dependence on f. Yes, yes. Exactly, right. I have nothing to say for the most part about satellite renormalization. All right. So now we can come close to stating a theorem. Maybe I'll leave the outline for better or for worse. Yeah. Well, I'll leave the outline. Well, almost stated there. Okay, a couple more definitions. So let's specialize to the case of a quadratic polynomial. So let f sub c of z equal z squared plus c, right? We say, we say that f is infinitely renormalizable of bounded primitive type if there exists a sequence of natural numbers n1 dividing n2 dividing n3 and so on. Again, it's the theorem of McMullen that all the primitive renormalization times will divide each other. Any two different ones will divide each other. Such that, if there exists, say, B and N1, such that F is primitively Ni renormalizable for all I, and the successive ratios, n, say, k plus 1 over nk, are bounded by B. All right? Yeah, that's exactly right. And in fact, what it means is that if you look at all the sequence of primitive or satellite renormalizations, we're all right as long as it's bounded type, as long as all the successive periods are bounded, and there's no long chains of satellite renormalizations. All right. And now we can state the theorem, which is really the one main theorem of the talk. This is sometimes known as the complex a priori bounds. And it says, let F as B infinitely renormalizable of bounded primitive type as here, then we can find renormalizations F to the Ni from U sub Ni to V sub Ni such that this modulus of V Ni minus U Ni is bigger than a constant depending only on this B here. All right, so this blackboard obviously depends on this one for its notation. But it says if it's yes, that's what I mean. This the notation here is taken from that board. So it says, sorry? It's not true for all renormalizations, meaning like the satellite ones in between? Ah, well, of course it's not true for all renormalizations, because, right, if I had one such renormalization, so if I had un, vn, and this is f to the n, I can also find a vn very close here, right, and then take its, I can have a vn prime very close to this. Okay, so all I mean by what we say when we find, yes. Yes. Okay, so, right, for all I, we can find U and I and V and I. Okay. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, so it really was not clear. Okay, for all I, yes. We can find renormalization. Sorry. No, no. The only reason I said we can find renormalizations means we can find U and I and V and I. Yes. Yes, exactly. These are not canonically defined in any way, so they exist. All right. I just want to state two implications of this theorem. All right. One is for C, such that FC is infinitely renormalizable, again, of bounded primitive type. The Mandelbrot set M is locally connected at C. All right. And the second statement, which follows, so this goes back, this is a kind of standard argument, and this follows from the work of Lubitsch, that, all right, so if, well, for all D, The test theory kind of said right, but the set of bounded renormalizations the set of primitive renormalizations of period at most B forms a hyperbolic dynamical system near its invariant set. All right, so I mean this requires really a lot of discussion in and of itself, so I'm not going to say too much about it, but the idea of this statement is that if we choose some fixed set of small mammograms, let's say one here, and one here or something. So if we choose some big set of small Mandelbrot sets, there's, from each one of these, there's a, so to kind of draw this picture one-dimensionally, each one of these becomes just an interval here. And then there's the space of quadratic-like maps, or really germs, that straighten to a given hybrid class corresponding to a given C. And by renormalization and straightening, each one of these small Mandelbrot sets is mapped to the whole one, and each one of these leaves is mapped to another leaf. And there'll be an invariant set of C values, which are basically the C values that are infinitely renormalizable of these types and only these types. And over that, by the work of Lubitsch and others, that there will be an invariant set for renormalization on the space of quadratic-like germs, and that the renormalization will be hyperbolic on this space. And two implies a corollary that the set of C in the Mandelbrot set, for which F sub C is infinitely renormalizable of B bounded. So, of course, for all B here, the set of C in the Mandelbrot set for which F sub C is infinitely renormalizable of B bounded primitive type is QC equivalent, say, to the middle thirds Cantor set. It's a sort of regularly nested Cantor set, and in particular, it has measure zero and Hausdorff dimension less than two. This corollary would apply. I mean, sorry?
The level of argumentation,
are you saying that the corollary is more or less immediate to any kind of
situation
where you have to like to explore the thing about quadratic dynamics? No, it's basically a general statement. Yes. So all the things that have the same sort of amount of problems? Yes, they should be, and I have to think about it a little bit, but it should follow that they're sort of bounded quasi conformal geometry. Is that right? All right. Right. I mean, we're saying essentially that when you have this kind of hyperbolic type renormalization where there's one expanding eigenvalue everywhere, one expanding direction, or so where the codimension, in other words, of the attracting parts is one, and then you have the final direction is expanding uniformly, then you have a projection that when you take this kind of projection, you'll get a quasi-conformal Cantor set. Let's see here. For all B, the set of primitive renormalizations. Right, this is true for, I mean, this is on the set of quadratic-like maps or quadratic-like germs, yes. But every such one, of course, it's, the point is that the germs fiber over the yes. But you do not get measure zero. very much a mystery. All right. So, I started at, how much time are we?
Well, you have till, I think it's
12:40. How about 12:45? All right, so I've taken half an hour to get the first step. This may be a problem. We're probably never going to get to correct the false theorem. All right, so the first thing to do, I'm saying we're finding these renormalizations. I haven't said how we're going to find them. So I want to give a sort of alternative version of this theorem. So let's say statement one. So again, for such F, okay, so I've written it enough times, we know what kind of F I'm talking about. Okay, so we let, say, rho K be the Poincaré metric on C minus the union, or C minus the union of the small Julia sets of level n, of level k. And we let gamma k be say the simple closed curve n c minus k n k such that gamma k is isotopic to k k sub n k, which is terrible, but just to draw a simple picture of this, yes, its winding number is 1 over, right, I should say really isotopic, say, to the boundary of it. It's isotopic to the ideal boundary corresponding to that. So in a simple picture here, if this whole thing is script K3, this is capital K3, this is gamma 3. All right? Whatever. Okay, so we didn't finish the statement here. I'll say statement one. The length in this Poincaré metric, rho k, of gamma k. So for all b, again, f b bounded primitive, infinitely renormalizable, is going to imply that there exists some epsilon greater than zero such that the length of gamma k in the metric rho k is bigger. Ah, this is backwards. There exists some L is less than L, all right? And this, by not very difficult argument, implies the main theorem, all right? So it's saying that if we have this space between the Julia sets, then we can find a renormalization. Right, if, yeah. This saying that this length is at most L is equivalent to saying that there's some annulus, so separating that central small Julia set, some definite modulus annulus separating that small Julia set from all the others. And then it's not too hard to find a definite modulus for normalization. This statement is true. Everything so far is true. Now, I'll tell you when we get to the false theorem. All right. No, we're going to get there soon. Well, that's on the outline, but... All right. The question is whether Linda will give me the time to retract it at the end. All right. So, let's see. We can say... how do I want to say this? Okay, yeah. Statement 2, or statement 1 prime, let's say. All right. Says, again, for the same hypothesis, so for all B, if F is B primitively bounded, B primitively infinitely renormalizable, then that implies that there exists L, which will serve a very similar role, and the K, such that if L rho, say, n of gamma n is bigger than L, and n is bigger than K, then L rho n minus K of gamma n minus K is bigger than twice L rho n of gamma n. All right? So this is what I mean in the abstract when I say if it's bad now, it was worse earlier. All right. Sorry? Statement 1 is, yes, there exists L such that for all K, this holds. And this, again, is for all. So, yeah, this is a poor choice here. So let's say this is R, and this is K, K, because K, K, K minus R, gamma of K minus R. All right, and this is K. So here the relation is clear. Sorry? K bigger than R. All right. So here this is very simple. It's just saying that we have this uniform lower bound on lengths of GD6, uniform upper bound on lengths of GD6. And here it says if we find at some stage a long GD6, then in fact at some previous stage, we had an even longer one. And really, these two statements are equivalent because we're just making a statement about a sequence of numbers. And in one case, I'm saying the sequence of numbers stays bounded. And in the other case, I'm saying that if, as we go along this sequence of numbers, if I find one that's very large, then I have a previous one that's even larger. So as long as we know that the first few are bounded, and we do, just by a kind of continuity argument, then 1 implies 1 prime. 1 prime implies 1. All right? So really, I have not yet done anything. But, okay, so here's a theorem that we will show in the time remaining. And it says, let F, again, so it's a quadratic-like map, be N1, NK, primitively renormalizable. Again, N, say, I plus 1 over NI less than or equal to B. So here we're looking at only finitely many stages of renormalization. If L sub rho k of gamma k is bigger than L, then, okay, so I should be careful here. So for all B, there exists a K and an L, okay? Maybe this K should be R, but I don't care. Okay, so for all B, there exists a K and L such that if it's renormalizable, bounded by B, but just K steps, and this geodesic is long, then the length in rho k, say, of gamma 1 is bigger than L. Let me put it in those terms. So here again, right, gamma I is isotopic to k sub ni of f, okay, or the boundary of it, and rho k is the Poincaré metric on, okay, so if we say f from u to v, rho k is the Poincaré metric on v now minus the union of the small Julia sets at level k. All right? All right, so now we can state our false theorem. So this is not a theorem. It would be very nice if it were a theorem. So let's say, what would we like to say? Basically, we want a theorem that we can use to derive statement 1 prime from this theorem. So let's see if I can get this right. Basically, so suppose suppose that f, say, from z goes to f, a quadratic polynomial, is, say, primitively n renormalizable. Suppose that it is primitively renormalizable, then we can find an N renormalization of F. Okay, so an N renormalization, say F to the N from U to Z of F, such that, okay, so one, the first condition is that, maybe it's best to just kind of draw this here. So here I have U, V, maybe I should call them UN, VN, and then here I have this KN, okay? And the first condition I would want is that the length in, essentially, if the length of, in the Poincaré metric on Vn minus Kn of this gamma n is going to equal the length in the Poincaré metric in C minus all these Kn's of gamma n. All right, so there's this small Julia set, there's many other small Julia sets, and then we're finding a renormalization such that this geodesic here has the same length in this Poincaré metric as it would surrounded by all the small Julia sets in the Poincaré metric and the complement of all the small Julia sets. Sorry? No, I mean literally the same. It's a false theorem. But you'll see. No, you'll see when I correct it that we're going to get something very close in which it's literally the same. All right? And then it'll be a good theorem. But for the moment, we just have a false theorem. And the second thing is that if I replace this by a bunch of small Julia sets, all right? Sure, sure. If I have some further renormalization n prime of f, okay, that I want to say that the length in the Poincaré metric of vn minus all these small Julia sets in the renormalization of again, the geodesic going around here. Let's see. I want that to be that should be, I believe, greater than or equal to the length in gamma sub rho sub n prime. So it would be a complement of all these small Julia sets. Of the same thing. All right. So, yeah, that's right.
When you speak of a geodesic, you're referring to the geodesic being a metric?
Yes. So whenever I talk about the length of a simple closed curve, I really mean the length of the geodesic in that free homotopy class. Yes. The statement about everything that says theorem is a theorem, yes. Oh, no, so this theorem is a theorem to be proven, okay?
But you seem to say that B is independent of the choice of B.
B, no, for all B, for all B.
Yeah.
For all B, there exists a K and an L.
Yeah, so the L exists independent of the choice of B on the right.
B on the right. Yes, so I'm saying that for all B, if I have any quadratic-like map, F from U to V, all right, with these combinatorics, then if this kind of bottom geodesic, this lower-level geodesic is long, this is not what I wanted to say anyway. I wanted to say 2L, 2 rho K, gamma K. So I'm saying that if this bottom geodesic is long, then the top level geodesic is long. And that's going to be true regardless of the choice of V.
Hey, so rho k is not
the
same.
Sorry?
Well, gamma 1, so rho k is measuring gamma 1.
Yes, it's rho k measuring gamma 1. But the point is that L, the length in rho 1 of gamma 1, is bigger than the length in rho k. All right? So it's. Yeah. No. Okay, we'll see. That because if we were to choose, say, some very narrow space for V, it would force this any inner geodesic to be long, but we'd see that this outer geodesic is twice as long. So we do not have to. Yes, it's correct as written. All right, well, we're running way behind on time. So the point is that this theorem and this false theorem imply statement 1 prime. Okay, you just have to go around a little bit.
But why doesn't the first one obviously imply statement 1?
Well, how would it imply statement 1?
L sub rho 1 of gamma 1 is whatever it is. And so L rho k of gamma k is smaller than 1/2.
So the problem is that, okay, to try to answer that question, we're going through many levels. Yeah, no, that's a pretty good way of putting it. We're going through many levels of renormalization. And the statement one says, well, that there's a uniform lower bound on all levels. But all we have is this theorem here. Let's see. It's important that this is not going to be true. It's not true that for all B and for all case, there exists an L that works for all K sufficiently large. Okay, L really depends on K. So it just says that if I choose a bound B, say 3 or something, then I have a K, say 2 or something, so I can go 2 steps back. If I have a long GCDQ here, I can go 2 steps back and find an even longer GCDQ in this quadratic-like map that's only 2 times renormalizable. All right? And the idea is that if I have many, many stages of renormalization, and that down here I get a long GCDQ, then if this false theorem were true, right, I can renormalize my map. I can say go 2 stages up, renormalize, and I have a long GCDQ of the renormalization by this statement. Then I go 2 steps back by the theorem, and I get that the previous one was even longer using this equality, which is false. Yes. Yeah. Right. In this theorem, okay. So this theorem is not written so well. Okay. So when I say, okay, well, no, I did say it right here, that rho k is the Poincaré metric on V minus these small Julia sets. So, right, it's a different Poincaré metric. And so, unless I have something like this false theorem, I have no direct way of comparing the lengths in the renormalization versus the original lengths. Right? The whole problem is that this is a false theorem, that even if I have some bounds on the length that, well, all right, we can talk afterwards. So, all right, so we've gotten through step 2 of the outline, which means it's quite unlikely that we will correct the false theorem before the end. All right, so now we have Riemann surfaces and weighted arc diagrams. All right, I'd like to be able to say something intelligent here. Okay, so a weighted arc diagram let's put it this way. Let S be a Riemann surface of finite topology, say a compact Riemann surface of finite topology with boundary. All right. Right. So, here's some sort of picture of that. We could have some handle or whatever. An arc, right, an arc is a properly embedded interval up to isotopy and orientation reversing. And so a weighted arc diagram, okay, a weighted multi-arc or arc diagram is a weighted sum of arcs. Okay, is a say R plus weighted sum of arcs. And if you have two in the same homotopy class, you can just add their weight. Alright. Yes, is a weighted sum, sorry, of disjoint arcs. That's important. Alright. So, there's this kind of theorem, which I don't have too much time to explain. Sorry? Oh, great. This theorem says that there's this kind of functor from Riemann surfaces to weighted multi-arcs, okay, which I'll call the canonical weighted multi-arc, right? And the idea is it's basically going to tell you the thin part of the surface and how thin it is. So the idea is that we're going to decompose the surface as these kind of thin parts plus something, you know, kind of a bounded geometry. And for each one, so let's call this A, B, I'm going to uniformize it to be a rectangle, say normalize it to be height 1. And so if this is alpha here, this is going to be this canonical multi-arc, the value of the canonical multi-arc on this arc alpha is exactly going to equal this width. All right? So, no, it behaves well with respect to covers. So, sorry? Well, by functor at the moment I just mean map, but I'll state some properties. Okay? So the morphisms basically are covering maps of Riemann surfaces. Okay? So, property one, there are a bunch of properties. Okay, so there exists this functor with the following properties. With the following properties. One is that if, say, F from S to T is a covering, then F, then this canonical multi-arc for F, S, is the pullback of the canonical multi-arc for T. Okay? Riemann surface here means Riemann surface with boundary. Yeah, it's the compact Riemann surface of finite topology with boundary. All right. And, okay. Two is that if gamma is isotopic to the boundary of S. So if I have some simple closed curve isotopic to the ideal boundary of S, then the length in the Poincaré metric of S of gamma is equal to pi, I think, what is it? It's something like 2 pi times the intersection number of gamma with this canonical weighted multi-arc plus a constant just depending on the topology of S. Yes. Yes. It's the only way it can be isotopic to the boundary. The isotopic. So let's say it's Riemann's compact Riemann surface of finite topology with boundary. And let's also assume that the Euler characteristic of S is bigger than 1. So it has like at least 2 holes or something. So the second property says that if you have a curve near the, you know, isotopic to the boundary of S, then you know the Poincaré metric up to a constant from how the total weight of arcs that it intersects. By Poincaré metric, it means, okay, I should be careful here, right. So this Poincaré metric is the Poincaré metric for the interior of S. Okay? No. If you took the geodesic boundary, then it would be the geodesic boundary, but it would be the wrong number. And, yeah, okay, so there are a number of more interesting properties, but yeah, unfortunately. So let's see, basically I'm ignoring the cylinders. Sorry? Yeah, no, but he's saying that if I had a short geodesic, right, that's... It will not be homotopic... Yes, exactly. In this case, I think he's saying something about how we form this canonical later arc. I'll answer it afterwards. Okay. So, I mean, really all I have time to say here is, let me just do one more board and then I'll stop. Unfortunately. Okay, so, we have sort of another reformulation of this theorem that I just erased. And it says that, so if, again, with the same hypothesis, so if F from U to V is, actually I'll write it this way. Okay, so it's N, comma, primitively N R renormalizable. Okay. Then let X. Let me put it this way. Then, if I take this canonical weighted multi-arc of V minus K N R. Okay. So. What I want to say here, okay, so for all R, there exists C and C prime, something like this. And then I take, so I'll explain what this means in just a second. It's bigger than a constant times the horizontal part of V minus K N R norm 1. So this, yes, minus, say, C prime. Okay? So just to explain what this means, and then I'll have to finish. That we have this kind of normalization, so there are all these small Jewish sets. Now we have this canonical weighted multi-arc, and it may have vertical parts and horizontal parts. So vertical, right. So vertical means, so this is vertical. It means small Julia set to outer boundary. This is horizontal. It means small Julia set to small Julia set. And what this, sorry? Okay, so what I'm saying is that I look at V minus, sorry, I take V minus all the small Julia sets. And then I add the boundary, the ideal boundary. So I think of it as a compact Riemann surface. Then I have this canonical weighted multi-arc. Okay? And this statement says that the vertical part, the sort of total weight of the vertical part represents a definite proportion of the total weight period. It's sort of bigger than some constant times the horizontal part. If these weights are large, there's a kind of bounded additive error. And the result of this is that if I look at this geodesic, this simple closed curve, which which is isotopic to the boundary, versus this simple closed curve, all right, this simple closed curve will have intersection about 1 over n times the total weighting, 1 over this big N r, and this one will have something like the total vertical. So what's important here is that this constant, I have two steps of renormalization, and this constant depends only on the second step of renormalization, which is assumed to be bounded by B. And I think of this first step as renormalization as maybe several steps of bounded renormalization. So that once this N gets to be large, it dominates this constant C, which may be very small. And then it means that this intersection number is more than twice this intersection number. And hence we have the results about lengths of GD6.